Chapter 47, Section 4. Money Rent. By money rent, as distinct from industrial and commercial ground rent based upon the capitalist mode of production, which is but an excess over average profit, we here mean the ground rent, which arises from a mere change in form of rent in kind, just as the latter in turn is but a modification of labour rent. The direct producer here turns over, instead of the product, its price to the landlord, who may be either the state or a private individual. An excess of products in their natural form no longer suffices. It must be converted from its natural form into money form. Although the direct producer still continues to produce at least the greater part of his means of subsistence himself, a certain portion of this product must now be converted into commodities, must be produced as commodities. The character of the entire mode of production is thus more or less changed. It loses its independence, its detachment from social connection. The ratio of cost of production, which now comprises greater or lesser expenditures of money, becomes decisive. At any rate, the excess of that portion of gross product to be converted into money over that portion which must serve, on the one hand, as means of reproduction again, and on the other, as means of direct subsistence, assumes a determining role. However, the basis of this type of rent, although approaching its dissolution, remains the same as that of rent in kind, which constitutes its point of departure. The direct producer, as before, is still possessor of the land, either through inheritance or some other traditional right, and must perform for his lord, as owner of his most essential condition of production, excess corvée labour, that is, unpaid labour, for which no equivalent is returned, in the form of a surplus product transformed into money. Ownership of the conditions of labour, as distinct from land, such as agricultural implements and other goods and chattels, is transformed into the property of the direct producer, even under the earlier forms of rent, first, in fact, and then also legally. And even more so is this the precondition for the form of money rent. The transformation of rent in kind into money rent, taking place first sporadically and then on a more or less national scale, presupposes a considerable development of commerce, of urban industry, of commodity production in general, and thereby of money circulation. It furthermore assumes a market price for products, and that they be sold at prices roughly approximating their values, which need not at all be the case under earlier forms. In Eastern Europe, we may still partly observe this transformation taking place under our very eyes. How unfeasible it can be without a certain development of social labour productivity is proved by various unsuccessful attempts to carry it through under the Roman Empire, and by relapses into rent in kind, after seeking to convert at least the state tax portion of this rent into money rent. The same transitional difficulties are evidenced, for example, in pre-revolutionary France, when money rent was combined with, and adulterated by, survivals of its earlier forms. Money rent, as a transmuted form of rent in kind, and in antithesis to it, is nevertheless the final form, and simultaneously the form of dissolution of the type of ground rent which we have heretofore considered, namely, ground rent as the normal form of surplus value and of the unpaid surplus labour to be performed for the owner of the conditions of production. In its pure form, this rent, like labour rent and rent in kind, represents no excess over profit. It absorbs the profit, as it is understood. In so far as profit arises beside it, practically as a separate portion of excess labour, money rent, like rent in its earlier forms, still constitutes the normal limit of such embryonic profit, which can only develop in relation to the possibilities of exploitation, be it of one's own excess labour or that of another, which remains after the performance of the surplus labour represented by money rent. Should any profit actually arise along with this rent, then this profit does not constitute the limit of rent, but rather conversely the rent is the limit of the profit. However, as already indicated, money rent is simultaneously the form of dissolution of the ground rent considered thus far, coinciding prima facie with surplus value and surplus labour, that is, ground rent as the normal and dominant form of surplus value. In its further development, money rent must lead, aside from all intermediate forms, for example, the small peasant tenant farmer, either to the transformation of land into peasant's freehold, or to the form corresponding to the capitalist mode of production, that is, to rent paid by the capitalist tenant farmer. With money rent prevailing, the traditional and customary legal relationship between landlord and subjects who possess and cultivate a part of the land is necessarily turned into a pure money relationship, fixed contractually in accordance with the rules of positive law. The possessor engaged in cultivation thus becomes virtually a mere tenant. This transformation serves, on the one hand, provided other general production relations permit, to expropriate more and more the old peasant possessors and to substitute capitalist tenants in their stead. On the other hand, it leads to the former possessor buying himself free from his rent obligation and to his transformation into an independent peasant with complete ownership of the land he tills. The transformation of rent in kind into money rent is furthermore not only inevitably accompanied, but even anticipated, by the formation of a class of propertyless day labourers, who hire themselves out for money. During their genesis, when this new class appears but sporadically, the custom necessarily develops among the more prosperous peasants subject to rent payments, of exploiting agricultural wage labourers for their own account, much as in feudal times, when the more well-to-do peasant serfs themselves also held serfs. In this way, they gradually acquire the possibility of accumulating a certain amount of wealth, and themselves becoming transformed into future capitalists. The old self-employed possessors of land themselves thus give rise to a nursery school for capitalist tenants, whose development is conditioned by the general development of capitalist production beyond the bounds of the countryside. This class shoots up very rapidly when particularly favourable circumstances come to its aid, as in England in the 16th century, where the then progressive depreciation of money enriched them under the customary long leases, at the expense of the landlords. Furthermore, as soon as rent assumes the form of money rent, and thereby the relationship between rent-paying peasant and landlord becomes a relationship fixed by contract, a development which is only possible generally when the world market, commerce, and manufacture have reached a certain relatively high level, the leasing of land to capitalists inevitably also makes its appearance. The latter hitherto stood beyond the rural limits, and now carry over to the countryside and agriculture the capital acquired in the cities, and with it the capitalist mode of operation developed, that is, creating a product as a mere commodity and solely as a means of appropriating surplus value. This form can become the general rule only in those countries which dominate the world market in the period of transition from the feudal to the capitalist mode of production. When the capitalist tenant farmer steps in between landlord and actual tiller of the soil, all relations which arose out of the old rural mode of production are torn asunder. The farmer becomes the actual commander of these agricultural labourers, and the actual exploiter of their surplus labour, whereas the landlord maintains a direct relationship, and indeed simply a money and contractual relationship, solely with this capitalist tenant. Thus, the nature of rent is also transformed, not merely in fact and by chance, as occurred in part even under earlier forms, but normally in its recognized and prevailing form. From the normal form of surplus value and surplus labor, it descends to a mere excess of this surplus labor over that portion of it appropriated by the exploiting capitalist in the form of profit. Just as the total surplus labor, profit, and excess over profit is extracted directly by him, collected in the form of the total surplus product, and turned into cash. It is only the excess portion of this surplus value, which is extracted by him from the agricultural labourer by direct exploitation by means of his capital, which he turns over to the landlord as rent. How much or how little he turns over to the latter depends, on the average, upon the limits set by the average profit, which is realised by capital in the non-agricultural spheres of production, and by the prices of non-agricultural production regulated by this average profit. From a normal form of surplus value and surplus labour, rent has now become transformed into an excess over that portion of the surplus labour claimed in advance by capital as its legitimate and normal share, and characteristic of this particular sphere of production, the agricultural sphere of production. Profit, instead of rent, has now become the normal form of surplus value, and rent still exists solely as a form, not of surplus value in general, but of one of its offshoots, surplus profit, which assumes an independent form under particular circumstances. It is not necessary to elaborate the manner in which a gradual transformation in the mode of production itself corresponds to this transformation. This already follows from the fact that it is normal for the capitalist tenant farmer to produce agricultural products as commodities, and that while formerly only the excess over his means of subsistence was converted into commodities, now but a relatively insignificant part of these commodities is directly used by him as means of subsistence. It is no longer the land, but rather capital, which has now brought even agricultural labour under its direct sway and productiveness. The average profit and the price of production regulated thereby are formed outside of relations in the countryside and within the sphere of urban trade and manufacture. The profit of the rent-paying peasant does not enter into it as an equalizing factor, for his relation to the landlord is not a capitalist one. Insofar as he makes a profit, that is, realizes an excess above his necessary means of subsistence, either by his own labour or through exploiting other people's labour, it is done behind the back of the normal relationship, and other circumstances being equal, the size of this profit does not determine rent, but on the contrary, it is determined by the rent as its limit. The high rate of profit in the Middle Ages is not entirely due to the low composition of capital, in which the variable component invested in wages predominates. It is due to swindling on the land, the appropriation of a portion of the landlord's rent and of the income of his vassals. If the countryside exploits the town politically in the Middle Ages, wherever feudalism has not been broken down by exceptional urban development as in Italy, the town, on the other hand, exploits the land economically everywhere and without exception, through its monopoly prices, its system of taxation, its guild organization, its direct commercial fraudulence, and its usury. One might imagine that the mere appearance of the capitalist farmer in agricultural production would prove that the price of agricultural products, which from time immemorial have paid rent in one form or another, must be higher, at least at the time of this appearance, than the prices of production of manufacture. Whether it be because the price of such agricultural products has reached a monopoly price level, or has risen as high as the value of the agricultural products and their value actually is above the price of production regulated by the average profit. For were this not so, the capitalist farmer could not at all realize, at the existing prices of agricultural produce, first the average profit out of the price of these products, and then pay out of the same price an excess above this profit in the form of rent. One might conclude from this that the general rate of profit which guides the capitalist farmer in his contract with the landlord has been formed without including rent, and, therefore, as soon as it assumes a regulating role in agricultural production, it finds this excess at hand and pays it to the landlord. It is in this traditional manner that, for instance, Herr Rodbertus explains the matter. J. Rodbertus. Letters to von Kirchmann. Third letter. Refutation of the Ricardian theory of rent and the establishment of a new theory of rent. See also Karl Marx, Theorien über den Mehrwert. Theories of Surplus Value. Part 2, 1957. But, first, this appearance of capital as an independent and leading force in agriculture does not take place all at once and generally, but gradually, and in particular lines of production. It encompasses at first not agriculture proper, but such branches of production as cattle breeding, especially sheep raising, whose principal product, wool, offers at the early stages a constant excess of market price over price of production during the rise of industry, and this does not level out until later, thus in England during the 16th century. Secondly, since this capitalist production appears at first but sporadically, the assumption cannot be disputed that it first extends only to such land categories as are able, through their particular fertility or their exceptionally favourable location, to generally pay a differential rent. Thirdly, let us even assume that at the time this mode of production appeared, and this indeed presupposes an increasing preponderance of urban demand, the prices of agricultural products were higher than the price of production, as was doubtless the case in England during the last third of the 17th century. Nevertheless, as soon as this mode of production has somewhat extricated itself from the mere subordination of agriculture to capital, and as soon as agricultural improvement and the reduction of production costs, which necessarily accompany its development, have taken place, the balance will be restored by a reaction, a fall in the price of agricultural produce, as happened in England in the first half of the 18th century. Rent, thus, as an excess over the average profit, cannot be explained in this traditional way. Whatever may be the existing historical circumstances at the time rent first appears, once it has struck root, it cannot exist except under the modern conditions earlier described. Finally, it should be noted in the transformation of rent in kind into money rent that along with it, capitalized rent or the price of land, and thus its alienability and alienation, become essential factors, and that thereby not only can the former peasant, subject to payment of rent, be transformed into an independent peasant proprietor, but also urban and other moneyed people can buy real estate in order to lease it either to peasants or capitalists, and thus enjoy rent as a form of interest on their capital so invested. That therefore this circumstance likewise facilitates the transformation of the former mode of exploitation, of the relation between owner and actual cultivator of the land, and of rent itself.